It's Smadar Rosenzweig.
Number one, I'm going to start with Sfirat HaOmer, because the whole theme of today's Yom Yod is Sfirat HaOmer. So we're going to be discussing the main ideas of Sfirat HaOmer as they pertain to certain ideas that have to do with focus and how would I describe it? Not just focus, but also generating life goals for yourself. Number two, as examples, I want to bring two typologies. I'm going to discuss Miriam and Rut, along with other leaders in Tanakh. We'll discuss men as well, but mostly we're going to be focusing on Miriam and Rut. And number three, because Yom HaShoah is really upon us, I just want to make one kind of mention of Yom HaShoah and of some of the things that we see in Tanakh, and can we really learn any kind of life lessons from the role models that we're studying today and see them through the eyes of either survivors or, for us, second generation and third generation in our understanding of the lessons of the Holocaust. So I just want to do those three ideas today. Sfirat HaOmer is really about growth and development. We have local goals and global goals. We have immediate and long-term values that we want to really understand from Yom HaShoah, from Sfirat HaOmer, and it's about plotting a course to reach not only your personal goals, but community goals. And how do we see that in Sfirat HaOmer? So if you open up to your source sheet on Sfirat HaOmer, that's the one that says Sfirat HaOmer on top. I know it's a little confusing that we have so many, but it's the one that says Sfirat HaOmer. It starts with Vayikra. Are there more? Do you have
Are there more instructions?
Yeah, I'll give it to you and you'll come in there. Let's see if you find them. So the first source that we have on Sfirat HaOmer is in Vayikra Perek Kaf Gimel, Pasuk Tet Vav. It says, "Usfartem lachem mimachorat haShabbat, miyom aviyachem et Omer haTnufa, sheva Shabbatot mimot tiyena." One of the first indications of Sfirat HaOmer. Sfirat HaOmer is discussed as counting 7 weeks. Which means our first introduction to Sfirat HaOmer is 7 weeks. In Vayikra Perek Kaf Gimel Pasuk Tet Zayin, which means the next Pasuk, it says, Ad Machorat HaShabbat HaShvi'i Tispiru Chamishim Yom. So we have this idea of weeks. We have Sheva Shabbatot Tmimot Tiyena, and then we have the idea of Chamishim Yom. So already, when we count Sfirat HaOmer, we have two ideas. Number one, we have the idea of weeks. And number two, we have the idea of days, which means we have the bigger units, which is weeks, and then we have the unit of days. In addition, we also have this idea, v'hikravtem mincha chadasha l'Hashem. At the end of Sfirat HaOmer, you bring mincha chadasha, and what's the korban that's mincha chadasha? It's the shtei halechem. It's a korban of chita that we bring on Shavuot. How do we start this process? Look back in Vayikra Perek Kaf Gimel Pasuk Tetva, the first source. We bring Miyom Haviyachem Et Omer HaTnufa. What do we bring? We bring Korban HaOmer. And what is Korban HaOmer? Korban HaOmer is Seora. So we go from Seora to Chita. We go from the counting of the idea of weeks to the counting of days. So we have two different ideas that we have here in Sfirat HaOmer. Number one, we have the aggregate of individual days, but we also have the larger units of weeks. Why do we have to count weeks and days? Why does the Torah mention both? I mean, what do we gain out of counting weeks, and what do we gain out of counting days? Another thing is that Shavuot, right, is never called Chag Matan Torah. We know, according to the counting and the way the Torah describes it, that it's Matan Torah, right? Because we know that's when it happened. If you count from Pesach to Shavuot, when Bnei Israel were betachti tahar and received the Torah. But it never says that Shavuot is Chag Matan Torateinu. It's called either Chag HaShavuot, because the week's ideas is so important, or it's called Atzeret, right? Or it's called Atzeret. What's so interesting about Atzeret? We have another day that's called Atzeret, and that's the last day of Sukkot, right? Sukkot, Shmini Atzeret, is really Atzeret. So the Ramban has a very nice idea. The Ramban tries to explain what is the correlation, what is the connection between Pesach and Shavuot and Sukkot, and Shavuot? How do you really integrate the two? Because obviously, we count the Shavuot from Pesach, Mimochorat Shabbat, the second day of Pesach, we count Sirata Omer, and also it's called Atzeret. We only have one other Chag that's called Atzeret. Another thing which is very interesting about Shavuot is that Shavuot has no specific minhag or mitzvah that you do that identifies it as a special day. Which means Shavuot is really a generic Chag. On Sukkot, we take lulav and etrog, we sit in a sukkah. On Pesach, we eat matzah, we can't eat chametz, which means we have specific mitzvot for that day. Really, Shavuot is a generic chag. Why would the chag for Shavuot be a generic chag? What other chag do we have that's generic? It's Shmini Atzeret. Shmini Atzeret also doesn't have any activity that you do. We don't take the lulav and etrog. We don't sit in a sukkah unless we are Yom Sheni Shel Galuyot. And then the only reason we sit in it because we see it as the eighth day of Sukkot. But in Eretz Yisrael, it doesn't have any kind of imprint like that. Today, we have what was later accumulated into our Chag calendar, Simchat Torah. We all understand Simchat Torah is not in the Torah, right? The idea of Simchat Torah was really an addition later on, right, that was incorporated because we finish the Kriyat HaTorah. So that's also an interesting idea, which means we finish the Kriyat HaTorah and Shmini Atzeret. And what is Kabbalat HaTorah Day called? Atzeret. So we have that connection. So the Ramban makes a very interesting comment. Look at the next source that I have. Ramban, Vayikra, Perek Kaf Gimel Pasuk Lamed Vav. We are going to start from the fifth line towards the end. The fifth line towards the end. From the word Ummana. Fifth line towards the end. One, two, three, four, five. I just want to make sure it is the fifth line. Umana mimenu tishava arba'im yom, shiv'a shavuot ki me'olam, v'kidesh yom shmini ki shmini shel chag, v'hayamim asfurim bentayim ki cholo shel mo'ed, right? Ben harishon v'ashmini b'chag, v'hu yom matan Torah, sheher'am bo'et isho, God's fire, hagdola, v'dvarav shamu mitoch ha'esh. V'lachen yikru'u rabotenu zal b'chol makom chag ha'shavuot atzeret. We always call Shavuot atzeret. Ki yu yom shmini shel chag shekar'u ha'katuv ken. Let's go back. What does Ramban want to say? That the sphere of days from Pesach to Shavuot is like chol ha'moed. Which means, originally, the sphere of time was really a time of simcha. Which means it was like a chol ha'moed from Pesach to Shavuot, which means the whole time period from coming out of Mitzrayim, the idea that we have to really understand and really imbibe from this is the idea of Kedusha and elevating ourselves from Yitziat Mitzrayim. What is Yitziat Mitzrayim all about? Freedom. Ein lecha ben chorin ela misho sek batorah. The idea of freedom, what was the freedom for? It was to receive the Torah. The Ramban says very importantly that Sefer Yetzirah Breshit is about developing the individuals and seeing them as role models. But Sefer Shemot is about Galut and Geula, right? It's about being in Mitzrayim and then being redeemed. Then Netziv adds an extra point, right? Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, the Hamek Davar. What was the whole goal of Yitziat Mitzrayim? Obviously, Kabbalat HaTorah. Which means when the Ramban is trying to say that coming out of Mitzrayim, right, until Kabbalat HaTorah, so what is the time period of the Omer? It is really counting towards Matan Torah. It's like a Chol HaMoed, which means this whole time period originally used to be a festive time period. When they used to bring Korban HaOmer, you understand, to Beit HaMikdash, it was really a time of rejoicing. Every day when they would bring Korban HaOmer, when they would count Sirat HaOmer, it was really a celebration. That's why in our day and later on, after Rabbi Akiva's students died and we also had a lot of that internecine warfare, it was really taking one of the most festive times of Am Yisrael and turning it right into one of the most serious times and a time that we really have to reevaluate our values, which we should have done through Simcha, but since we weren't doing it through Simcha, right, all of a sudden it really maintained this different kind of reality. What does the Rambam say? The Rambam, Hilchot Midin Umosifin, Umusafin, excuse me, next source. Mitzvah zu al kol ish Mishrael ubechol makom ubechol zman v'nashim v'avadim p'turim mimena. The Rambam's view is that Sfirat HaOmer is so important that he makes it a mitzvah to say that is doraita, and women and avadim are not obligated in it just because it's a mitzvah to say shezman grama. Right? But what do we know about mitzvot aseh she'as man grama? Right? Time-bound mitzvot. Even though women are not obligated, they could do it. And today, obviously, at least in the Ashkenazi community, right, women count Sfirat HaOmer with a bracha. Right? In our house, we're very machbid, right, to make sure that all the, you know, women as well say Sfirat HaOmer with a bracha. But what's interesting about the Rambam is that the Rambam says that right now it's a mitzvah d'oraita. Why is that so interesting? Because most of the Rishonim say that it's not a mitzvah d'oraita today, because it really was connected to the Korban. And because we don't have the Korban, as we saw in the Sukkim, what is Sfirat HaOmer connected to? The Korban. Because it's not connected to the Korban, right? So today we only do part of it, and because we only have part of it, right, what is the obligation? It's only the Rabbanan, right? Similar, we just had Pesach. What's the whole discussion? Which means because we have separate chiyuv for matzah and Pesach, not only connected with Korban Pesach, so that's why mitzvah today of matzah is d'oraita. But what do we do at Leila Seder that's the Rabbanan? Maror. Why is Maror d'Rabbanan? Because originally, how was it eaten? Al matzot umrorim yochluhu. I mean, the Korban Pesach was eaten on matzah and maror. We have a separate also chiyuv for matzah, and that's why it's not only connected to the Korban Pesach. So matzah today is d'oraita, and we usually view maror as the Rabbanan for that reason. Similar to here. So most of the Rishonim say that Sfirat HaOmer is the Rabbanan today. Why? Mitzvah taseh the Rabbanan, because we don't have the Korban HaOmer, which what it was connected to. So what really a lot of the Mefarshim are saying, the Rishonim are saying, is that Sfirat HaOmer is not just a personal obligation, it's also a communal obligation. And because we don't have the communal element today of the Korban, which all of Am Yisrael would bring, it was one Korban in Beit HaMikdash, Korban HaOmer, that's why our Chiyuv is diminished. The Rambam says no. The Rambam says, your personal obligation, Sfirat HaOmer, even without the communal obligation of the Korban, is so important that you still have the Chiyuv, d'oraita, today. Look at the Gemara, Talmud Bavli. What does the Rambam base it on? He bases it on the Gemara. Uspartem lachem, the Gemara says, shedehei sfira lekol echad ve'echad. Everybody has to count. The other Rishonim say, even though everyone has to count, really it's still connected with the Korban. Rambam says no. What does this mean? Right? This means that Sfirat HaOmer has a certain personal component for us today, and especially in the view of the Rambam, that it's d'oraita, which means what does Sfirat HaOmer really represent? Sfirat HaOmer represents this double idea of the long-term view of the Shavuot, of reaching Matan Torah, but also the individual days, setting yourself immediate goals, the idea of seeing the bigger picture, being able to make little steps. The idea of the Shavuot is that we're taking big units and chunks to achieve this outer goal. As the Ramban says, what is Sfirat HaOmer all about? It's counting towards Matan Torah. So what we see about Sfirat HaOmer is very goal-oriented. It's the goal of Matan Torah, and how do you get there? How do you get to achievement? How do you get to real success? So Sfirat HaOmer really describes it in two different ways. It's either by the little steps, by the yamim, right, that we count, we have a mitzvah to count weeks and days. Look at the Gemara. Talmud Bavli Masechet Menachot Daf Sam Chavav Amud Aleph. That's the last source on this page that we're going to do. Amar Abaye. Mitzvah lemimnei yomi, or mitzvah lemimnei shivui. There's a mitzvah to count days and weeks. When the Torah says days and weeks, it doesn't mean you could choose, ah, I like the weeks or I like the days. The Gemara says no. You have to count days and weeks. And that's why that's how we count Sfirat HaOmer. We count the days, right? We say what day it is, and we also say how it comes in the weeks. Why is it so important to have that double message? The weeks and the days, right? Rabbanan, the Bei Rashi. Right, manu yomei umanu shvui. Ame mar mani yomei velo mani shvur. Amar zecher lemikdashu. So some used to say, okay, we're going to count days. Others said, no, we're going to count weeks. But the ultimate decision was, no, you have to count the weeks and days. The whole idea is this idea of the individual steps and the bigger picture. So now, the question is, so how do we really see this and really understand the ramifications for, let's say, our personal lives, or Sfirat HaOmer, or the idea of leadership in Tanakh, which is what we're going to be discussing now for a little while. So what I'd like to represent is the women in two different typologies. On the one hand, we have the typology of Pesach, which we're going to, for the sake of this she'ur, really use Miriam as our role model, right? What's the typology of Miriam? Miriam comes from Levi, she comes from Yichus, right? She has a certain leadership model already ingrained in her background. We have the leadership model of Levi, right? When he sees something going on in Shechem, takes immediate action. It wasn't in the right direction. And what we're going to see very interestingly is that Miriam really is going to redirect and channel that zealousness of Shevet Levi and really try to direct it in a more positive fashion. But she already comes from a certain background. She comes from a certain ichus. And what we're going to see is that she's presented right away as self-assured, outspoken, active. She has foresight. She's an enabler to others and also acts independently as a leader in the community, both on a family and a national level. And we're going to see that she represents for us both the intellectual and spiritual leader. So too, we have other women like Benot Slavchad, the daughters of Slavchad, who come forward and ask for a nachala using right halachic language and understanding in order to present their goals. And also we have Dvorah, right, who was a great leader in Am Yisrael, an intellectual, really a prophetess of great stature, right, who also was one of the great intellectual minds of Am Yisrael. And we have her really defined in the same manner practically as Moshe Rabbeinu and later on Shmuel. We use a lot of the accolades that we use for Dvorah, we use for Shmuel. So really, Dvorah stands out as a very unique leader. So what we see here is that we have the individual of Miriam, the woman, both playing on a personal and a national arena, outspoken from the beginning. That is her hallmark. Also really comes on the stage on a national level, and that is the image that we have of Miriam. What's one typology? Right? She acts, she speaks, she is very straightforward in her activities. On the other hand, we have the typology of Ruth. Which means we're starting from Mitzrayim, we're starting with Miriam. We know Bizchut Nashim Tzidkaniot Shayu Boto Ador Nigalu Bnei Yisrael Mitzrayim. We have the idea that the women played an important role. The whole beginning of Shemot, which we're going to see, is about the Nashim. So we already set the tone for the Geula by these active women saying and doing what they think. On the other hand, we also have the typology of Ruth. Ruth is in that same camp as, let's say, Tamar, who start out very quiet, right, and really don't take an active role, and then really develop themselves. Esther also, right? Ein Esther magedet et amav molavta kasher tziva alea Mordechai, right? She is also very quiet, passive. Chana, very quiet and passive in the beginning, and then really steps up to the plate. What's fascinating about the Ruth typology, again, you could do a little different times, but for today, this typology is going to work for us very well. The Ruth is really the individual who starts off in more of a passive role, right, and slowly but quietly shows this quiet tenacity to really change things, and many times is changing them more in an enabler capacity to enable other people to achieve their goals. Whereas Miriam, we're going to see, sings Shirat Hayam, and she herself is a spiritual individual and teaches, and she is a public figure. We're going to have these other individuals who never become public figures. Esther, yes, but Ruth, no, right? And we also see with Tamar, never becomes a public figure herself, but becomes a great enabler. Abigail, as well, is never a public figure. After she gets married to David, we almost don't hear anything about her. But she really transformed David's life. So the typology of Ruth, we'll say Ruth, right? Tamar, who's before her, and Abigail is the typology of the enabler, the one who's passed in the beginning and really helps others achieve their great goals. Without them, these other people could not achieve their goals. And these people play a crucial role, but they themselves don't become, right, actors on the national or international arena, but their interpersonal and their personal input just changes the whole future of Am Yisrael. Just they themselves don't become the individuals, but we always mention them as the ones who transform others. For example, when Ruth is redeemed in the end of Megillat Ruth, who is mentioned? That she should be like whom? Like Tamar. So that's also very fascinating, which means we remember Tamar, but what was her great hallmark? It was enabling Yehuda to achieve his goals. What was Abigail's great hallmark? Enabling David to achieve his goal and not to kill Naval and to ruin his whole chance as becoming a leader. But later we don't hear about her as an active role player. Tamar, we don't hear about her efforts. What would you see with Ruth as well? In the end of Megillat Ruth, right, we don't hear about Ruth playing an important role, but what did she do? She enabled Boaz, right? And she had a child, and that enabled Naomi and Boaz, but she herself, right, is not active past that enabling role. So Ruth is a different typology. Also, Ruth is a little different because Ruth acts indirectly, whereas Miriam stands up talks to Bat Paro, right? She's the one. She has something to say about Moshe, right? We're not so pleased about that. That's a whole different shiur, but she speaks up to Aharon, right, and discusses with him, even though she really should have confronted Moshe, because that's really her modus operandi usually. But most important is when they come to Yam Suf and they're celebrating Shirat HaYam, she openly leads Benot Yisrael in song and dance, in Shirah V'Tishbachot. So she is definitely on the world arena. When Micha talks about Miriam, as we're going to see, when he mentions the three leaders of Am Yisrael, she's included. And the Targum Yonatan explains, what does it mean that Miriam was a leader? So the Targum Yonatan explains, she's Ora Al Neshaya. She was the teacher of the women. So in addition to being a spiritual leader, right, in singing and dancing, we're going to see that she was also an intellectual leader as well. Whereas Ruth is more active in the interpersonal areas. She helps others achieve their emotional maturity, right, and their intellectual maturity. But she herself is not really seen as an intellectual role model. Neither is Tamar. And Abigail is very interesting because she's a very smart woman, but we don't have any of her intellectual legacy left for us. Okay, so with that in mind, let's go to the sources. So we're going to see these two different typologies of leaders. We're going to focus more on the women, but we're also going to mention some ideas of the men as well. So what is so unusual, what's special about some of the values that we see in the beginning of Sefer Shemot? Because we're talking about leadership values and also about Miriam especially, and since we're using Miriam as an example for Pesach, right, and for that kind of freedom, then we're going to see some of the psukim. Look at the sources that the heading is Beren Unite Shabbaton. It's Shmot Perek Aleph is the first source that we're going to do. So in Shmot Perek Aleph, we see something very interesting. The main focus of all the prakim and the psukim in the beginning of Sefer Shmot are on the women, which means the ones who are taking the active role in Am Yisrael in the beginning of Sefer Shmot are the nashim. So what do we see? I'm going to start from Perek Aleph Pasuk Yutet, right? And we're going to read it both ways, which means there's a huge debate about the mialdot, the midwives in Am Yisrael. Were they Jewish or were they non-Jewish mialdot, right, who were helping the Jewish women? So what I'd like to present either way, right, either way, I think the pshat, and clearly the midrash reads it, that these were Jewish midwives, and mialdot ha'ivriot, the pshat really implies that they are Hebrew midwives helping the Hebrew women. But you can also read it that it is the midwives of the Hebrew women. So I'm going to include everyone under our umbrella today, which means women. So we're not even going to get into this whole issue, is it Jewish women or not Jewish women? But what I would like to show that in the beginning of Sefer Shemot, what we already see in the community of Mitzrayim, but especially in the community of the Nashim of Am Yisrael, is this goal-oriented by little steps and big steps of the achievement of bigger goals. And that's what we're going to see in the beginning of Sefer Shemot. And that's why these psukim are the sources for Bizchut Nashim Tzidkaniyot Nigalu Am Yisrael. It never says in the Chumash, oh, Bnei Yisrael were redeemed because the women played an important role. So where do you find the source for the Midrashim that the women played a very important role? So here they are. So we're starting from Pasuk Yutet. Vatomarna ha'mialdot el paro, right? Paro wants to kill all the girls and all the boys, right? And let all the Jewish young women live. Kilo, so the mialdot answer paro, right? We weren't successful, right, in killing everybody. But chayena tayladim, the midwives, not only let the children live, they were active participants in their success and development. Kilo kanashim ha'mitzriyot ha'ivriyot ki chayote. Now, right away, the Torah is telling us that the Jewish women are like chayot. What does it mean, chayot? Of course, pshat means like animals. But really, if you look at this whole section, right, you see that the source and the root word chay, chet yud, is really pervasive. Right? Ki chayotena, right? The Jewish women, the Hebrew women, are not just like animals. They're the life force of Israel. Really, women are really the life force of society, which means why are women the life force of society? Because despite the fact that Paro is telling them, kill all the boys, they are standing up to Paro. They're not doing what he wants. And when Paro thinks that women are really the weaker part of the community, and those are the ones who you can really force, right, in order to achieve your goals, right, they're saying we're not so pliable, right? The women are really the life force. So they say the women, the Hebrew women, are not like the Egyptian women. Ki chayotena, they are only the life force of Am Yisrael. Even before the midwife comes, they give birth. Now, let's go down, right? So where do we see that the women are the life force? Where do we have in the Pshat that women are really the life force? What qualities do they have? So here we're going to contrast the story of Yocheved and Miriam with the story of Hagar, which means what's the only other Egyptian woman that we know about in Tanakh so far? It's Hagar. What does the Pshat say? V'la shivcha mitzrit ushma Hagar. The only other individual we know of Tanakh who's an Egyptian woman, right, who plays an important role in our history, is Hagar. And what do we know about Hagar? Why would Paro think that women are pliable? Why would he think that women really don't stand up and really don't take an active role, and maybe the men are really the initiators and the actors in history, right? Let's go to source 3 on this page. When Hagar and Ishmael have to leave the house, right? Pasuk Tetvav. So we're going to start with Breshit Perakap Aleph, source number 3, Pasuk Tetvav. Vayechlu hamayim min achemet, vatashlechet hayelet tachad achad asichim. When there was no more water in the jug, she throws the boy under one of the bushes, which means we're going to see, we're comparing the experience in Am Yisrael, right? The women know that every time they have a son, he's going to be killed, right? Either he's going to be thrown into the Yor, right? Or the Egyptians are going to come and try to seek them out and kill them, right? So there's a very difficult time for Am Yisrael, not only because of that, because also the oppressive slave labor. The Jews, we know, in the beginning of Sefer Shemot, are in a situation of slave labor, right? It's a very difficult situation. Here, too, we feel bad for Hagar. She's in a terrible situation, right? She is now leaving the house of Abraham. She has to leave only with her son. She just has bread and water with her. But we're going to see the difference between Hagar's actions and the women of Am Yisrael. The minute there's no water, what does she do? She throws the boy down under one of the bushes. And what does she do? Pasuk Tetzayin. Vatelech. She walks. Vateshev laminegev. She sits down opposite as far as you can shoot an arrow. Which means once there's trouble with her son, instead of taking him by hand, doing something, playing an active role in his life, she gives up right away. The minute there's no more water, she throws already the boy down under the bushes. Not only that, she walks far away to sit as far as you can shoot an arrow. Because what does she say? What is she assuming already? That the child is dead. Or he's going to die. And again it says, Vateshev mineged. Again she sits opposite. The Torah wants to emphasize her inactivity, her despair, her despondency, the idea that she sees a terrible situation, and instead of taking an active role, she realizes this is the end, and I am just going to give up. Vatisat kola vatef, and she cries. And again, we always ask the question, what is this cry of anguish? Right? We also know that Bnei Yisrael are crying out in the beginning of Sefer Shemot, and we're wondering, are they depressed? Are they crying out because they're davening? Big debate among the Mefarshim. Are they doing tshuva and they're davening, or they just totally gave up and it's a cry of despondency? They've given up. Who are the ones who are going to really lift Bnei Yisrael up and realize that there's a future and there's continuity? Really, we see in Perek Aleph and Bet, it's the Nashim. They're the ones who have that vision. We're going to see how the Midrash plays on that as well. What happens? Vayishma Elokim et kol hanar, and the Malach Hashem cries out to Hagar and says, Malach Hagar, what is with you? Al Tiri, what is she really enveloped with? Fear. She is enveloped with fear, and she's almost in a catatonic state. She's paralyzed with this fear. And that's what happens. Not only that, the Malach says, Shama Elokim el kol hana'ar ba'asher husham, which means your cry was really a cry of giving up. Right? On the other hand, Ishmael is really crying for his life, so Hashem heard his cry. What should you do? Kumi, get up. See it hanar. Pick up the boy. Hachaziki et yadech. Behold his hand. Kilo goy gadol asimenu. And what does Hashem have to do? He has to open up her eyes. Vayifkach Elokim et eineha. Vatere be'er mayim. All of a sudden she sees that according to the Pshat, where was this well all the time? It was right there. She just opens her eyes and she sees that there really was a be'er mayim right there. Then she goes and she fills up her jug of water. Contrast that, and clearly the Torah is writing this as a contrast story because you'll see so many foils and correlations. Look at Shmot Perfet. What is the story with Moshe? Same situation. A great individual who has potential, right? What does the mother do? So we're in Shmot Perfet on the same page. We're just going up one source. We're in source number 2. Shmot Perfet. Vayelech ish mi beit levi vayikach et bat levi. Right? Amram gets married to Yocheved. We know later on from the story who's Who's everybody? What is their identity? Vatar ha'isha vatele ben. She's pregnant. She has a child. Vatere otokitoku. Right? What does it say about Hagar? Ale Rebbe Motayelet. She doesn't want to see. Right? But what do we see right away with Miriam and Yocheved, especially Yocheved? We're talking about the mother here. Vatere otokitoku. Right away she sees, right, that he's good. And even though it's a terrible situation, we just read that all the boys have to be thrown into the Or. What does she do right away? Vatitzpeneo shloshay rachim. She takes action. She hides him for 3 months. She has a long-term goal already. She's hiding him for months. As opposed to Hagar, the minute there's no more water, she throws him under the bushes. Which means, why is Yocheved saving the child? Because she doesn't want him to be thrown into the water. What does it say in Pasuk Kafet, in Perak Aleph? Right? Vayitzav paro l'chol ha'molimor kol ha'ben ha'ilot ha'yora tashlichuhu. So she's doing the exact opposite of what it is. What could she have done if she gave up when this child was born? In order not to see them take the child, what could she have done? Throw the boy herself into the Or. But no, she wants to save the child. And not only that, when she can't hide him anymore, vatikach, she takes a tevat gome, vatachmara b'chefer b'zafet vatasem et hayelet, vatasem basuf. What does Hagar do? Vatashlef, right? Again, she sits from afar. Just the opposite. Here they take it, they do everything they can to make the environment of the child secure in a teva. The only other time we have teva used in Tanakh is with tevat Noach, which means it's a symbol of refuge. As opposed to Hagar, what does she do? She throws the child under one of the bushes, right? Any old bush, right? She's not really thinking about his future. Everything we see about Miriam and the mother, which first the mother, then Miriam, is about the future. Pasuk Dalet, all of a sudden Miriam comes into the picture. Vatetatzavach oto merachok ledeam maya selo. Originally, Hagar throws the child harchek kemetachavei keshet because she says, Ale Rebbe Motayelet, I don't want to see the child. What does Miriam do? By standing from afar, she's going to save this child because she's seeing what's going to be with the child. So this is planning, again, merachok, which means she's looking afar to see and watching the child to make sure the child is going to be taken care of. So we see an exact opposite development of Hagar and Miriam.
What about the age difference between the two? One was an infant and the other one was pre-adolescent.
You mean of Ishmael?
Yes. I mean, aren't those factors too?
Meaning the hope that,
you know, if you think of an infant, you just don't, you coddle infants, so to speak, as opposed to with an older child who maybe can fend for himself a little bit more.
That's a good point. But it's clear, at least from the pshat, that this kid cannot fend for himself at all. And many times when you have a relationship with a child and you really know the child, you really care about them more sometimes than if it's just an infant, and infant mortality in those days was commonplace and a lot of boys were being killed. So it was just more common than to really let your child that you've grown up with, and this is your future, and you know him and develop, you know, with him. So I guess it could work. I guess it could work either way.
Yisrael was so dehydrated, he was limp like an infant. He really couldn't say.
I mean, without his mother, he could not.
Well, he was dehydrated.
He could not survive.
She was carrying him away. So he was like an infant. He couldn't even tell it.
So the point of the psukim in a comparison is at least the attitude of the mother. What should be the attitude of the mother? What should be the attitude of a mother when her child is in stress, whether an infant or an adult? He's totally needy for the mother's support. And what we see here is the contrast between the women of Mitzrayim and the women either of Am Yisrael or later on in Mitzrayim who might have learned this Hagar lesson. It's very interesting because Bat Paro, who's Paro's daughter, what does she do? She sees the child and she has chemla for him. So we already see that transformation. If we want to say, according to the pshat, right, one view of the pshat, that the Mialdot might have been Egyptian, what do we see already has happened in the beginning of Mitzrayim? Maybe Paro has convinced the men to go along with his strategy, but we already see a certain kind of uprising that not only the women of Am Yisrael, who might have been the role models, that you care about your children, and you see progeny and future, but maybe also we already see Bat Paro, and maybe if the Mialdot are Egyptian, they're also cluing in, oh, women do have an unbelievable power to change the future and destiny of a certain country. And what's ironic is it's Bat Paro saves Moshe, who is going to really transform the future and really bring the downfall of her father. So that's one picture. I want to do Rut. So here is, again, right away, before we get to Rut, we have one more piece on Miriam. Turn the page, sorry. Number 4 and 5. So here we see, within the family, Miriam is a player. She's making sure about the future of Am Yisrael. We all know the Midrashim, that what is the focus, right there? The focus there is the idea that she had Nevuot in Midrash, right? That Moshe is going to save Am Yisrael, and that's why she wants to make sure her parents have this child, which means the Midrashim are all focusing on Miriam's intervention within the family unit that will have ramifications for Am Yisrael. But there's also something else. When we see in Shirat Hayam, let's just go to number 5 right away. In Shmot Perek Tzayin, Tedvat, right, Pasukaf, Vatikach Miriam and Nevi'ah Achot Aaron et Atof Yada. Right away it tells us Miriam is a Nevi'ah, right, according to the Midrashim. Her Nevu'ah was that Moshe was going to be born. But she's already defined as a Nevi'ah. And not only that, she takes the Tof Biada and she gets all the women to come out after her to sing Shirat Tishmachot LaHashem. Which means not only is she playing on the family level of making sure that Moshe is going to be saved, and we see the comparing and contrasting between her and Hagar, here we see something very interesting, that she's also a national figure, which means she could be the leader of all the Nashim come out after her, to sing Shirat V'Tishbachot. So she's that kind of individual. We don't see any passivity, there's no moment of passivity with Miriam. We see Yocheved acting, we see Miriam acting. We see at Shirat Hayam, when her brother comes out and sings to all of Am Yisrael, she realizes that the women also have this kind of religious and spiritual obligation. So she's that go-get-them Dvora, B'not Slovchad, standing up and really saying what you really believe in, and changing Am Yisrael, not only on the family level, which she does, but also on the national level. On the other hand, we have Ruth. So let's look at Ruth. Compare that second typology, which is the more enabler and individual who starts off quiet, we don't really know their character, but develop throughout the story and really change other people's lives to reach their destiny. So before we start here, I just want to give you one of the main theories about Ruth and this kind of individual is the idea of enabling Malchut Yehuda. We see that Tamar is the one who really turns around Yehuda. We see that Ruth is the one who turns around Boaz. We see Abigail is the one who turns around David, which means for Malchut Yehuda and Malchut David to be successful, there is always a woman and an important road, crossroad, that really changes the destiny and makes sure that their destiny will be fulfilled. And without them, we don't think that Malchut Yehuda would be on track. We don't think Malchut David would be on track. So again, they're not players in their own right, but they are the ultimate enablers to make sure that the men, right, have the power behind the throne to achieve their goals, right, as opposed to what we saw with Miriam. We know about Dvorah, and we know about B'nai Tzlochad. So let's see about Ruth. We only have a few minutes, so we're just going to point the highlights about Ruth. And what we see about Ruth is very interesting. I want to start all the way from Pasukaf. So we're number 4. Pasukaf, is that what you have? I just want to make sure my copy is the same. Mm-hmm. Okay. In number 4, Pasukaf, when they're leaving, right, and they're coming back to Beit Lechem, right? But Tomer Aleim Naomi. Naomi says to them, don't call me Naomi, which means sweet. Call me Mara, call me bitter. Ki he mar shadai li me'od. What we see Naomi setting up as her thesis about life is that I'm a passive individual, and who is the one who really runs everything? Hashem. But I don't have a role to really put my input and to really change the destiny. What happened? When her husband Elimelech wanted to go and leave, when Bnei Israel were in a famine, he's Elimelech from Beit Lechem Yehuda. He is from Shevet Yehuda, from an important family. We know according to the lineages in Divrei Hayamim. He was practically in line to be Melech. What do we know about a Melech? A Melech has to have responsibility for others. That's why Yehuda, only after he takes responsibility for his two sons and for his future, through Tamar, do we see, he turns his whole life around and he can act and be responsible for Binyamin. So what's happening here is, who should have been that individual like Tamar for Elimelech when he wants to leave Am Yisrael and he doesn't want to play an important role in the community when they're all involved in a famine? His wife. She should have said, don't go. Stay. This is your place. We always see women are intervening. Sarah intervenes, Rivka intervenes, Rachel intervenes. The women are always intervening, right, to make sure that the men stay on track. So Naomi really missed her calling. Not only that, when they marry, she doesn't say anything. They marry the two women from Moab. When they're about to leave, why does she want to leave? She just wants to leave because she wants to be buried in Eretz Yisrael. She has no future in Moab. It's not like she wants to come back and start again. That's why when she comes back and everyone says, oh, you're back, they're not so happy because, you know, she left when they were in trouble. But she says, "Kol mi mara, ki himar shadai li me'od," which means Hashem embittered my life. which means how do you look at life? Do you play a role? Can you make a difference? Or is everything the will of Hashem, and that's why you can't make any difference? Now, this is different than if a terrible thing happens that you just admit and you realize Hashem does run the world. This is when you have a chance to really lead things in a certain direction, right? Do you just say, you throw up your hands and say, oh, Hashem did everything or not? And what's fascinating about Ruth is that even though she's passive in the beginning, she wants to go, we don't see her saying anything when she's married, right? And we see in the beginning that they do follow Naomi, but whereas Orpah turns back, we see that Ruth really continues. And she's that quiet, strong, determined individual who slowly but surely takes one step at a time and really is moving towards a certain goal. Whereas so Miriam, they wait 3 months, meaning we see that, sorry, yeah, 3 months. We see the bigger plot of time where we talk about Miriam, but here we see the small idea of steps. And what happens? Naomi is totally depressed. She says, I have no future, I'm just going back to die, but Ruth is determined to really follow her. And how does Ruth really change what's going on? So I want to go to Pasuk Yud Aleph, when number 6, Ruth Perek Zet, Pasuk Yud Aleph. Naomi is depressed. Naomi thinks there is no future, right? How is Ruth going to turn things around? Ruth finds out that Boaz is a member of the family, and Boaz has a big field. And what's fascinating here is the idea that Boaz really should have taken him in. Which means if Boaz is a member of the family, when Ruth and Naomi come in, what should he have done? He should have taken them in. Give them tzedakah. Not make Ruth travel in the fields. Not make her follow the boys in the fields. He should have really taken responsibility. Right? We have all these interesting midrashim why he didn't want to do that. But he had an obligation. He did not want to give them tzedakah. Why not bring them to his table and give them food if they're members of the family? That would have been the right type of tzedakah to do. We have a great midrash. It's on page 1. But we're, you know, kind of rushed for time, so we're not going to read all of them. Famous Midrash says that Boaz is one of the famous Shoftim in Am Yisrael. You know, Megillat Ruth takes place during the Shoftim. He's Iftsan Mibet Lechem. The only thing it tells us about Iftsan Mibet Lechem is that he had many children, he married them off, and, you know, he was able to find, you know, them wives, and he had all these children. Why is that the only thing it tells us about him? The Midrash wants to explain that Boaz, who is Iftsan according to the Midrash, was very selfish. Where does he get it from? This phrase. How, with Naomi and Ruth coming in, he doesn't take care of them. If Iftsan is during that time period, which means what is our hallmark of a leader? What was Elimelech's fault? He left, right? All of Bnei Israel were desperate, were destitute. It was a famine, and he left and only took care of himself. Which means what is the mark of a leader? Taking care of others, caring about others. And what was his big fault? Elimelech for sure left. But what's happening to Boaz is he's going in that same kind of vein. And that's why we wait till David HaMelech to find a Melech for Am Yisrael. How come we don't have in Sefer Shoftim Shevet Yehuda stepping up? Because throughout all of Sefer Shoftim, Shevet Yehuda does not really step up. It doesn't really take its responsibility. First time we see that is with Ruth. So what does Ruth want to get Boaz to do? Which means what's fascinating is that Ruth realizes Boaz is not seeing the bigger picture. He's not taking responsibility, not for the Am Yisrael and not for her. Which means, what's the first step a leader has to take? Responsibility. What was Yehuda's great step when Tamar says, who is the owner of these three items? That Yehuda admits and takes responsibility. And that's the key for a leader in Am Yisrael. So look at Pasuk Yud Aleph. Boaz is so impressed with her. He says, "Who gave you godly kol asher asit et chamotech?" Everything you did for your mother-in-law, right? He understands that action and doing for your mother-in-law is really amazing. Not only that, achrei motishech. We're all nice to the mother-in-law when the, you know, husband's alive, but if the husband's not alive, what's your relationship with the mother-in-law? Especially, what don't they have together? Children. They don't have children together, no grandchildren, and yet she's being, you know, so devoted to her. That's really unbelievable. Not only that, but tazvi et avich v'imech ve'ed eretz moladetech v'telchi el am asher lo yadat tmol shelshom. You're like Abraham Avinu, right? Lech lecha me'artzecha v'moladetecha v'beit avicha l'aretz asher areka. So you're like Abraham Avinu. That's amazing. Because what do you know about Ruth? She's a convert, and that's the other typology. Piece of the typology, which means Miriam comes from this great family. She comes from a great lineage. So, of course, we expect from her to act a certain way, right? She has certain genes. We know the idea of Kuhuna, Livia, Umalchut, right? We know this idea of coming from a certain family, being educated in a certain way. We have expectations. What's the beauty of Ruth? Ruth is the individual who doesn't have any background, right? Who really makes herself and really builds herself up as an individual, comes from this background of Moab, comes from Lot, and that's really her distant background, and really tries to develop herself as a creative and active individual. And that's the other theme that we want to discuss. which is the idea that Mitzrayim is Yitziat Mitzrayim, counting and developing. But on the other hand, we have Keter Torah. And Keter Torah munachat lifnei kulam, which means everybody has the ability to really attach themselves to Limud Torah and Torah. So again, a typology of Miriam and of Ruth. Both of these are great individuals, not only in the enabler public private role, but also in this other typology. It doesn't matter what your background, doesn't matter who you are, you could make anything of yourself. It's really in your hands. And what does Naomi, who has everything, and when she lost everything, she got totally depressed. On the other hand, Ruth, who starts out with everything in a sense, but then she loses everything because she's married to Mahlon and Chilion, died, her father-in-law dies, they're destitute, she attaches herself to Naomi, who's totally depressed, comes to every time, she's the one who really sees, I have a goal, and that's also the idea of Sfirat HaOmer. You take the little steps, and you realize that you have the goal in the end. And what we see here with Ruth, she says to Boaz, she's so smart. Look at Pasuk Yibet. Boaz says to her, Yishalem Hashem po'alech, utihim ha-tzkuratech shleimah me'im Hashem, asher bat lachasot tahat knafav. He says to her, Hashem should pay you back. Which means, what is Boaz expecting? I don't have to do anything. Who's responsible for everything? Hashem. Hashem should pay you back. He should give you payment for all the great things that you did. But what is she really expecting? For him to take responsibility. That's what Ruth is unique for. Ruth really is able to zero in on the ability to enable other people and to really recharge their batteries in order to take responsibility for their lives. So she says, and again, we're not doing all of Ruth. I just want to point this out because that's a whole different shiur. But she says, no, Pasuk Yud-Gimel. She says, "Emzachein be'inecha, Adoni. I want to find favor in your eyes," which means he says, "Oh, Hashem should take care of you. Oh, it's so nice you came under Hashem's wing." She says, "No, no, no, no. You're not getting this," which means you have to take care of me. He doesn't get it at all, right? He doesn't get it all at all. So what does she have to do in the end? In the end, she has to go down to the Goren, which means again, the women who have to do unusual acts. Miriam pretty much is straightforward in everything that she does. But also, they just come and they ask a question from Moshe. Dvorah also, she has a nevuah, she says a nevuah. There are no unusual back alleys that are going on here. Tamar, she sits on the road, she covers herself up. An unusual action. Esther also does it unusually, right? In a really indirect manner. Ruth also. She tries, she goes in the field, she hangs around with the girls, not with the boys, like Boaz said, because Boaz wanted her to marry one of the boys. So all of this, you know, hinting and inadvertent, not working. So finally, in the end, what does she have to do? We're in Perek Gimel. She comes to the Goren. But who already tells her all the instructions of how to come to the Goren? Naomi. Which means, what has she done to Naomi? Naomi was paralyzed. And also was so fearful and just wanted to die, all of a sudden is now having plans for the future. So what's fascinating about Ruth is she is able to enable others to achieve their goals. And she's really okay with that. What happens in Pasuk Tet? As she comes in the middle of the night to the Goren. And what does Boaz ask? Miat, who are you? And she says, Anochi Ruth Amatecha. I'm that same girl we met a few months ago. Right? Uparasta knafecha ala matecha ki goelata. Originally, what'd she say? Right? Oh, I don't want to be like one of your shvachot. He said, Hashem should spread his wings on you. So now she realizes she has to say it straight out. I am Ruth, your servant. Ufarasta knafecha lamatecha ki goel. You have to spread your wings on me because you're the goel. And here we have a double entendre. You're the goel for me. Geula means marrying. If it's not yibum, it's not a brother, right? Then it's an extended relative, then it's Geula, that's what we call it. So he's a Goel, but not only that. In order to be the Goel of Am Yisrael, what do you have to do? You have to take responsibility. You have to realize that your actions will do something. So if you want to be a Goel, if you want to stand up in Am Yisrael, this is your chance. And in the end, what do we see? Look at Pasuk Yud Zayin. After they have a child, right? Who does this child rejuvenate? Naomi, right? Vatikach Naomi et hayeled, vatishiteu b'cheka vatihilo le'omenet. And all the shechenot, all the neighbors, who do they say this child is? Naomi's child. Which means Ruth is that kind of personality. Now, not everyone has that ability, but Ruth is that kind of personality. She's able to subsume herself and is willing to and do chesed for other people, and there will be greatness coming out of it, but she's willing to almost lose her own identity, to enable other people to achieve their goal. Now, we remember her because we read Megillat Ruth and we read how great her activities are. But if you read the end of Megillat Ruth, what does it say? Batikrana lo shchenot shem lemor yulad ben Naomi. Right? And he's Avishai, Avi David. And then we go on to the whole lineage. But in a sense, what is Ruth willing to do? she is willing to rejuvenate Naomi. She's willing to rejuvenate Boaz and for them to achieve their goals. But our tribute to her is that we always remember Megillat Rut. We mentioned as Megillat Rut. What could we call this sefer? Megillat Naomi, absolutely. And what could we call Megillat Esther? Megillat Mordechai. And who do we remember about the Yehuda and Tamar story really centrally? Tamar, right? In the end here, what are we saying? Again, we don't have time to read all the Sukkim, but it says, when we talk about her, as we said earlier, we mentioned Tamar again, which means they themselves were really willing to be enablers, right? And to see the other goal, not their own self-aggrandizement, as part of the important fabric of Am Yisrael. But we realize that that's an important tribute. And here I just want to make my last point. Tonight is Yom HaShoah. Until now, we usually really spoke about the individuals and the Holocaust as victims, as individuals who, you know, really didn't take a stand. But 35 years ago, my mother really transformed Holocaust studies in a sense that we don't look at them as victims, we don't look at the numbers on the arm, we don't look at the stories from the German point of view, but we want to hear the narratives, we want to hear the oral histories, we want to hear the stories of the individuals. All we saw is that each person had a different kind of individual heroism, a different kind of spiritual heroism. Everybody had a story, whether a woman or a man or children, everybody really did something that really, because of their environment or how they acted, really changed the history of their immediate family, but also of the Jewish community as well. Every single individual, whether a victim who died or a survivor, really played an important role during that difficult time period. And to hear the stories, and to hear their voice that was lost all those years ago, is really so important for us to understand that their heroism, their activities, whether it was, you know, little things within the family or whether it was on a national stage, but their voice was lost. And what we really should always do and really see, just like we realize and study the individuals in Tanakh as role models, and understand that their actions really made a difference, and they realized that their involvement with family, their involvement with the Jewish community, or bigger picture, really changed the reality for Am Yisrael. We look to them as role models. So too, we see that a lot of the individuals really had a certain kind of, you know, spiritual heroism, a certain kind of emotional maturity and heroism that really affected us today. I know for me, for sure, you know, my mother being for Eliach, and, you know, experiencing, you know, the Holocaust afterwards, again, just like Naomi, she could have said, you know, my life is bitter, everything is terrible, everyone in my family is killed. Her father helped save a lot of people in the community, and also his family. He hid gold before the Holocaust. He was one of the people who really felt it was coming. Very few individuals did, so he hid gold all over. He wanted to escape. My grandmother, my mother's mother, said, we're not leaving. The whole family is here. We cannot leave the family, so we're going to stay. And that was really the story of a lot of individuals. A lot of people didn't escape, not because they didn't have the opportunity, but how could you leave family? How could you leave the extended family behind? And he stayed, but he planted gold in a lot of places in the forest. And he was able to save a lot of people in the community. Well, in Lithuania, only 3% survived, but he saved 25 individuals. But what happened to them, they also survived in the forest and under the pig pen of an aristocrat that my grandfather kept on, you know, dishing out gold every so often. But when they came back to the house after, and they were in Lithuania, so for them the war started in 1941, and they were only liberated in 1945, so we're talking about a very long time that they were running and hiding. And only after they came back, the local people did not want them back. And when my mother and her father and uncle and mother and brother were in the attic, did the local population come and gun down my grandmother and the baby after all the years of being saved? After that, they arrested my grandfather, and he was put in Siberian hard labor camp. My uncle, who lost his entire family, took my mother in, came to Israel, and then sent her to a children's village because he didn't want to raise her. And very nice man, but, you know, he just had enough, and he wanted to build his own family and not take responsibility for her. And she could have just said, this is it, I'm giving up, I'm just going to cry, and this is the end of my life, and there is no future. And what's amazing is that she really built up a family, built up her life, and also felt that the story of these individuals, just like her story, but especially other stories, she enabled thousands of people to tell their story, and for us to really understand what it was, you know, to be in that situation, and what kind of courage these other people underwent. So I think that even though it's a little bit of a stretch, and I did want to give a tribute to my mother today, but really the individuals and the stories, just like we really are inspired by the stories in Tanakh, clearly, in the way we understand their message in Chazal, so too, there's really a lot to learn about heroes in our day and age. Many individuals, you know, not everyone has to go through the Holocaust in order to be a heroine for us, but we do want to remember their voices, and we do want to remember their stories, and it's really, especially, we set out one day a year to really, you know, think about them and what their contribution was to, you know, the greater community. So again, just as a last point, this is also part of our message of Svirat HaOmer, which means Yom HaShoah falls out, Yom HaTzma'ut falls out actually in Svirat HaOmer. The idea, what are the little steps and what are the big steps it takes for us to really build up our personal lives and also the future of the Jewish community. And I think we really have that ability, whether we're a Miriam type or whether we're a Ruth type. I mean, there's every single kind of personality in Am Yisrael that we can make our contributions. And no matter what way we make it, many times we think, oh, we'll never be remembered, it won't make a mark. But whatever we do in one way or another, it does make a mark, and it really does change the future of Am Yisrael.
I think Representative Lewis, like, so much for coming today, and thank you all for coming and contributing to JNF Parsons Water Fund. Please take more refreshments upstairs, take home for snacks if there's more left over, and have a great day. Thank you.
She's the first one who did oral surveillance. So what do they have to do that way? She stood up and she said nothing. She gave their voice, right? So their rights, their stories, the Germans, they're soulless.
Yeah.
I think they're
soulless.
I'll be there with you.
Ah, that's
I said, well, let's go throw up a tank of gas next door. You know, he's telling me, open it up, it's not your money, blah, blah, blah.
Thank you so much for coming. Have a great day.
Stands over me.
Thank you.
You called the police anyway because clearly I had fun.
Right.
I could have called the police.
Oh my God.
I said, no. They come in. So the thing is money.